Yeah, I'm not saying it's necessarily like bad because there's a lot of things you can learn from there. But it shouldn't be only that. Your security program shouldn't be a string of eureka moments from scrolling through LinkedIn. It should be, you know, a plan. So I think my idea would be, depending on where you're at, but even if you are just like a security engineer,
Welcome back to the Talking Security Podcast, your go-to podcast for all things related cybersecurity. My name is Frans Huidendorp, and together with Pujan Gabazi, we're hosting this podcast. And we couldn't be more thrilled to kick off season two of the MVP Security Insights series. In this season, we're diving deeper into the world of security, bringing the MVP experts onto the table with practical tips, thought-provoking discussions to help you to stay ahead of the curve in the ever-evolving landscape of digital threats. Pujan.
Definitely, Franz. And today we'll be exploring a couple of really cool topics like security monitoring in the cloud, threat intelligence, many more awesome topics. But before we go there, I'm really excited to welcome our special guest, Truls Thorstad Dahlstrøm, who brings a wealth of knowledge and experience to our conversation. So grab your headphones, settle in, and let's get started on this journey to a more secure digital future. And to start, Truls, first of all, welcome. Can you introduce yourself to our listeners? Tell us a little bit about your background as well.
Yeah, sure. Nice to be here. Thanks for having me on. My name is Truls, or Trolls, as they like to call me in English. I'm a security MVP and security architect based out of Oslo, Norway. My background is, from IT, as most other people. I started out always being very into computers and games, so I just followed that into the army here in Norway. Where I studied, and then went on to started hacking at a platform called Hack the Box, which led me into security sometime around 2016, I think. And from there, it turned into penetration testing. It turned into using that to get into a SOC, and then security engineering, and now security architecture. So that's sort of like my background. I think that's basically it. Yeah.
And what was your road to become an MVP? How did you manage that, so to say?
That's a good question. It was kind of random, I think. When I was working in the army, I was doing system administration, network administration stuff, and we had a guide for how to do stuff, but it was mostly old and old technology. And so we started making our own trainings. We started teaching our own courses, me and some colleagues. And that led to, at some point, I started a blog when I started working as a consultant, just to write my own notes for some certifications I was doing. And then I jumped into writing about some hacking stuff, and I sort of kept doing that for a lot of years. Didn't really think about the MVP stuff, and then I joined the Microsoft Security Customer Connection Program, And in my second year, I was one of the top credit earners, and I asked Christina Quick, which is the lead of the program. I really recommend the program, by the way, it's really good. I asked her how the MVP award works for security, and then she messaged me back a couple of hours later because she's based in America, and she said, "Well, I just nominated you for the award," and so that was kind of scary, but it worked out. Yeah, so that's how I sort of stumbled into to being an MVP. Luckily, I had already at that point written a blog for a long time, but it was kind of by accident, yeah.
Yeah,
Cool.
nice. And I saw on the profile that you're not only once yeah, you don't have one category, so it's you're an MVP in two categories. So your knowledge is not only related to one specific piece of security stuff within Microsoft, isn't it?
Yeah, so yeah, no, I'm both cloud security and also CM and XDR. So it's I don't know why, but I work mostly with like cloud security posture and posture management. I also work a lot with identity and access, which is its own category. And then my main focus is obviously security monitoring, and I work in a MSSP, so it's a lot of Sentinel, a lot of Defender XDR, but also, you know, Defender for cloud apps, and a lot of access management and access patterns and things like that. So yeah, it's I hear some people say that the if you're a dual MVP, you're like your Azure MVP and you're also a security MVP, that's the good kind of dual MVP. So I'm the bad kind. I'm just two security awards, but I'll take it. It's cool. I'm happy with just the one though, for sure.
I know I know the feeling, because I'm an MVP on cloud security, but also an Intune, and that's also security. So yeah, it's not the problem in my opinion. Boyan.
Yeah. So, yeah, you mentioned some of the technologies that you have been working with, Trolls, and some of the technologies that you're working with at the moment. I think it's a pretty wide realm of technologies, right? We went from cloud to identity to some other. When it's come to Microsoft security and Microsoft security technologies, what are your primary tools? Or let's also dive a little bit deeper in, because we can say, yeah, Defender XDR, but that's, as Rod said once before, Defender for everything. What are specific toolings and programs that you're using at the moment into your day-to-day job?
Yeah, so it's a bit of everything, but mostly like my core is Microsoft Sentinel. We use Sentinel as our main security monitoring tool for our services, and so it's a lot of connecting Sentinel with a lot of different other external tools. So it's Sentinel, it's automation. I do a lot of, you know, creating playbooks and creating integrations. So that's the main thing. I would say also historically, my focus has been MSSP approaches. So it's been a lot of Azure Lighthouse, a lot of access management, and a lot of like configuring stuff automatically for specifically for Microsoft Sentinel. But then also for XDR specifically, it's mostly Defender for Endpoint, which is like the main focus. But you know, it's a little bit of everything. We use all of the parts of Defender XDR. So it's more or less a bit of everything, but I would say like Sentinel and Defender for Endpoint is the workloads that I have the most experience in, to put it like that.
I do remember a blog post from you, Charles, to mention out the good things and the bad things on Sentinel. Maybe good to point out here the number
Yeah.
one best and the number one worse?
Well, I think it's hard to remember on the top of my head, but the one of the things that I said was the best things about Sentinel was the community. I know there's a lot of other toolings that have communities as well, but I have tried a lot of different security monitoring solutions. I did a lot of MVPs and POCs, and I can say with like fairly like 99% confidence that the customer connection programs and the previews and the community you find there for Microsoft part is very good. Like you get to be a part of that development. And I think so that's really good, and you can like find the right people. The other side of that coin, obviously, which is a bit negative, is that some of the products are not finished yet. They are maybe a bit behind the curve in terms of like how good they are. And so you really see that when you're doing like development and you're testing features that, say, you're testing a web application firewall feature, and all of the other WAFs have that specific like technology in them already, and now you're testing this, which is like standard in the industry. And so I think that's the two flip sides of the approach Microsoft is using, which obviously I really commend them for doing it, because it's kind of brave in a sense, but I think it's a very cool thing if you want to be a bit ahead of the curve, and also if you want to be able to talk, maybe if you're working as a consultant or an MSSP, if you want to be able to answer questions when new pieces of Microsoft technology becomes available, you are able to today just get that information and test it and do it. So you can be a really good proactive like security partner in that sense. So I think that's a really good like shout if someone wants to do the little like extra thing, is to go there and test things for sure.
Definitely. Yeah, we had Pablo and Katie on our season finale. So we talked about a lot. We will include the link. So for everybody who are interested, Truls is completely right. Go definitely watch it. We will talk about how you can get it onboarded and everything in that as well. So, Truls, looking on your current project and based on your focus, what are some of the customer or maybe community projects or initiatives that you are currently working on? And are there any specific challenges that you are trying to address?
Right now it's threat intelligence that I'm for the CCP. I'm the discussion lead for threat intelligence. I'm not a threat intelligence person by trade, but I have a military background, and I find it very interesting to like read a lot of security news and use that information. And I find that threat intelligence in security monitoring, and especially in the Microsoft sphere, is kind of undervalued, where it's mostly used as a data source for your security monitoring. So you just plug some indicators of compromise, which are IPs and hashes and URLs that have been used in cyber attacks. You just plug them as a data source into Sentinel, and then you do detection with them. But that's very reactive. I find, and it's not, you will only find cyber attacks that have already happened to someone else doing that. And so it is a part of a good solution, but it's not the only, you shouldn't stop there. There's a lot of things you can do. So I'm writing a lot about threat intelligence at the moment, how we can use it to create more robust detection that doesn't only like focus on specific attacks that already happened, but also how we can use threat intelligence to look at trends and look at what's coming. And also it can, you know, help us invest in the proper tooling or in the right people. And so that's the main focus. I created two PowerShell modules to help me be more effective with working with indicators. So those are on my GitHub and on my blog as well. And I'm working on a new Azure function to be able to pull threat intelligence indicators and put them into Sentinel more easily. So that's going to probably be out in the next couple of months. And then I also can't remember when I did it, but I created a training course, which is like a attack defend where you perform the attack first and then you go into Sentinel and you find the indicators of the attack afterwards, which is going to be out sometime in the next couple of months for free. So those are the things that I've been doing and am focusing on right now. So that's going to be, I think, the main focus until summer. After that, I'm not sure. We'll see what pops up, what I'm interested in. I'm usually it's very like suddenly there's nothing that interests me, so I just don't do anything for a couple of months, and then suddenly there's like a new thing that's really cool, and I'm like, ooh, shiny, and then that's what I dedicate 3 months to. So we'll see what interests me. I think it's important, at least if you're gonna like spend so much time doing something like we are with the MVP stuff, you have to really like be into it and enjoy it. If you're doing it like, oh, I have to keep doing this to maintain the title and keep it, it's like it's not going to be sustainable. So for me, it's if I have a few months where I'm not doing something, it's fine, it's not a problem.
That's exactly what you're saying. If you are not if it's only for the title, then yeah, there probably will be an end. It must be fun. It must be in your ecosystem. And for me, that's the main reason I'd like to share knowledge, educate people and help them. And if that's the main reason, then yeah, in my opinion, you deserve these kind of things. If it's only for title-ish thingies, then probably you will quit within a short term of period. I guess. Going back to all the things you're working on, talking about threat intel and that kind of new technologies that are coming up. How do you leverage the Microsoft technology in this? Because you're working mostly with Microsoft technology, as I heard. That's what I heard back. Are there other technologies as well, or is it mainly Microsoft? And how do you leverage the Microsoft technology to enhance them, customers, and how do you help them?
Yeah, I think that's a hard question to answer. It sounds easy, but no, it's we use mostly Microsoft. When we decided to do that, it was mostly because I came into security monitoring, and then we were using something. I will not name the product, but it was very bad. And the way you integrated it, it was we use ServiceNow for ITSM. And so yep. Our tickets would go there, and there was you could only send one data field. Like you couldn't put even a, like so you had to JSON format a single string, and then you had to do a lot of magic in ServiceNow to get the information. It was so horrible, and you couldn't get the sync back because it had no API. So it was like it was really bad. So we wanted to do something different. So our thing was cloud first security monitoring. And so Sentinel was like, we test it, it's fine, it's cool, you can automate everything. And so we just started running with that. So we use a lot of Microsoft, it's the core of what we do, but we also use, if a customer is heavily on-premise, we will use Splunk instead, right? If it's EDR for Linux right now, I can say Defender for Linux is not best in breed, Sentinel One is better, so we use that. But it's I think it's a thing where even if you are a Microsoft MVP, the most important thing is that you make a solution that fits the customer. So if they want to ask you honestly, should we buy all Microsoft products, or do you recommend something different? And also, it's like a cost value thing. I think for most people, full on Microsoft is fine. It will do the job. Some have more specific needs, and so it's more important for me to deliver something good to the customer. But I think for the most part, we are very happy with everything we use from Microsoft. We are able to make a really good service out of those tools, and it's at least now over a couple of years, because I've been giving feedback for a couple of years, but I know a lot of other people has been as well. It's becoming very good for MSSPs. And I also talked to a lot of people at Ignite, and they said, well, we don't build for MSSPs first. That's sort of like the second or third thought. So for us, it's like we can help our customers implement a lot of cool solutions, but we have to wait. And once the MSSP like access and things kick in, it's really good. So waiting right now for like something like Security Copilot, maybe you will get some sort of MSSP access there. Maybe the billing model will fit the EU customers more closely. Right now, it's a bit too big of an initial investment, I feel like, for a lot of people. So things like that would really be really cool. So I think I don't know, it's really cool. It's just so many APIs, and you can do so many things and create so many cool like custom things that give a lot of value. And I don't know. It's hard to just pick one thing. I feel like it's all getting like, it's like a buffer overflow attack in my brain. It's like everything keeps popping on top of each other. So it's I think it's I don't know if that answered your question, like the initial question, but that was just like what came to my mind.
Yeah, but I love what you was mentioning, because I think we're all three working quite long with Microsoft products already. And if you're looking at the past, I know the times from Windows 98, Windows Vista, Windows 2000 server, and that kind of things. And if you know where we're coming from, then nowadays we have so much to be proud of that it is Microsoft at the moment that is helping us to deliver solutions for our customers. If you told me 15 years ago that I was a Microsoft consultant at the moment helping companies delivering Microsoft solutions to help them, yeah, I think I was a bit of a laugh that in that time of period. But nowadays, yeah, it's I love the technology that we are using today. So I love that kind of thing that you mentioned, and I think it's really that. Do we have other questions, Puyan?
Definitely. And every time you ask, I need to. Really, I don't know what it is. So we talked a lot about products, technologies, and one of the things that we try also get a better understanding when it comes with the whole MVP Insights series that we started is to get a better understanding of what kind, if there are any differences on a global or local challenges that you are seeing at the moment, for example. We talked with some people before about regulations. It can be, but in general, what would be some of the biggest cybersecurity challenges in today's market? And I think one of whether we can all three agree on.
Yeah, U.S. elections, right? It's that's a good question. I think. What we've been hearing for a long time is lack of people. I don't really see it. I think what I see the most is a focus on quick wins. A lot of people are doing If you've checked out, I was on, it was a long time ago, but I was on the Azure Security podcast with Mark Simos, and we talked about anti-patterns in security monitoring and anti-patterns in general in security. He has the, he is a part of the team that makes the Microsoft Cybersecurity Reference Architecture, which is really good, but they have a part on anti-patterns in security, which is really cool. And it basically tells you a lot of the mistakes people are making. It is a bit, it focuses obviously on the things Microsoft are good at, but that's fine. But it's really good. I think people should check it out if they're like, what mistakes am I making? If you want to have some reassurance. I think a lot of people, what I'm seeing across a lot of companies is that they are committing these, what you call them, sins, but it's basically a pattern of repeated mistakes. I think also we as security people, we are really bad at speaking the correct language sometimes. Mm-hmm. So we are usually, historically, I guess, the department of no, but it's also turned into a thing where if you have this idea that security is binary, it's either secure or not secure, you're kind of in the wrong, because you need to make some lean a bit nicer. Like, not every system needs to be similarly secure. So I think security people could be a bit better at that. I don't know, the current state of the world, obviously. I think my biggest prediction is that we will see a lot more people move from the cloud, a lot of their services. That's my biggest prediction. I think in
the next... There are also some community initiatives, right, on that?
Yeah, and I think also, like, for at least in Europe, at least what I've seen is that there's also a bunch of, like, local initiatives inside governments to create governmental clouds that are not based on any of the big US providers. So I think we will see, most likely, we will see a big European cloud provider rise in the next 3 to 5 years. And I think we will also see a rise of a bunch of sovereign national clouds from a lot of the tech heavy nations in Europe. I think that's a big trend, at least the way regulations are going in the EU. I think that will be my bold prediction. I don't think it's that bold, but I think for sure, at least the amount of people moving to the cloud will sort of decrease depending on the type of company.
So it doesn't mean companies and people don't go to the cloud, but the cloud will be more locally regulated as it is for other countries maybe at the moment. So it will be more a European cloud.
Yeah, I think so. I think to sort of like keep up, I think maybe a company like Microsoft or even Amazon or something like that, they would need to be able to provide a full service within Europe without having any sort of like links to the US. I think I'm not sure how it will go, but I think that's at least because of the US election and the state of the world, a lot of people are focusing more inward being more, like, I guess, skeptical of at least U.S. foreign policy, which is, yeah. So we'll see. I think it's outside the control of a company like Microsoft, I think. I think it's outside their control how it goes. I think this is world, like, this is foreign policy on a, like, world level. I think it will go as it goes. Governments will decide what they do. But I think it's interesting to like pay attention to that. And it's something we also need to keep in mind when we are talking to customers, I think, at least to be aware of any risks and issues.
Yeah, totally agree on that. State of the world has impact on technology that we are using today. Are there any other trends, especially in the cybersecurity landscape in the next few years, that you foresee? Or not directly related to what happens in the world at the moment, maybe, but maybe it is. Are there any thoughts on?
No, I don't know. It's obviously AI is a big one. I think adoption in the US has been good. I know it's not been as good in Europe. So I think that will also most likely change. I think that will be something we're seeing. I think it is at a point where it was like a bit overhyped. I didn't buy into it that much, but I think it's when people see it for what it's good at, I think it's a real like great tool. I think a lot of big European companies with internal SOCs will have great value from something like Security Copilot. Yep. So I think we will see more adoption. Again, if Microsoft is listening, hopefully we implement Security Copilot MSSP access via Lighthouse. Thank you very much. So I can also use it. No, I don't think...
Not only you.
Yeah, a lot of people, I know. What else
Lighthouse
is there?
Lighthouse is going to be hard, right? As Lighthouse is Azure and not Entra ID. So we already can predict that's going to be a hard one.
Yeah, if they make...
Same with Defender, right? So...
Yeah. So it has to be... It could be identity governance, but that doesn't work in the same way. So maybe if they made Security Copilot specific Azure RBAC role that also has access to Sentinel or something, would do magic. But we'll see. It's...
Max calls.
Yeah. Exactly. No, but... Apart from that, I think it's there's not too much. I think I said it earlier that there is a lot of a lot more focus on, I call it the golden age of LinkedIn golden nuggets. But a lot of people, I think that they have their security program is like 95% they're lucky to see a LinkedIn post and they're like, oh, I should do that, and then they instead of like reading some a baseline, right, like going into maybe, oh, we should look at SIS benchmarks and like follow those, and maybe, you know, CISA has released the guidance, let's read it. No, let's not, let's just wait for someone on LinkedIn to post like a little snippet of what you should do. So I think like hopefully it's the trend I'm seeing is like quick wins. It's more fun to like get like a lot of small quick wins and not fun to sit and work with like a big project and have a lot of controls, but it is what works. I think in one of my presentations I say that security should be boring at the base level because it works. Like good normal IT works. It's like the basis of security. If you have no asset control, no EDR, flat network, and you're throwing Security Copilot on top of that, it's like building a skyscraper on a floating bridge. It's like it will crumble and fall. So you need to have like basics, and basics are boring and it takes time, but the trend is right now people don't want to do boring stuff, they want to do cool stuff like AI.
So
and, yeah,
what would then be your advice to current IT and security professionals that are looking to stay ahead in the field of cybersecurity? Because indeed, a lot of them are getting maybe their content from LinkedIn or some other social channels.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's necessarily like bad, because there's a lot of things you can learn from there, but it shouldn't be only that. Your security program shouldn't be a string of eureka moments from scrolling through LinkedIn. It should be... you know, a plan. So I think my idea would be, depending on where you're at, but even if you are just like a security engineer, just a security engineer, I'm a security engineer myself, so it's, you know, but you don't need to be a CISO or a security architect or a leader to have some sort of idea of where you should move with security. And so having a plan, what you want to, where do you want to be in 3 to 5 years? Not you personally, but where do you want your security to be? And you can say things like, oh, I want, if there is a event on a device that we know for certain are most likely true positive, outside working hours, I want that device to be isolated. Things like that, you can have some ideas, and then you can work towards those goals. And following something like a baseline, Maester, the tool Maester, is really good at guiding you through this. It will let you run tests towards your Azure tenant and your setup and tell you you're missing something. You can follow that. That's fine. You don't need to know everything yourself. So I think use guidelines, frameworks, use the tools that are available. And for staying ahead, you don't need to if you don't want to. It's fine to just, you know, go to work, do your job, and then go home and do something completely different. I wouldn't, if I wasn't interested, I wouldn't spend so much time on it. So I think if you find something that you are really into, like a specific like niche topic, I would say that's the biggest advice, to just like lean really heavily into that, especially if you're getting paid for it. So then it's just, you know, chase that, learn about it, know how to do it well, know how to do it in different scenarios. I think that's good.
And talking about that last piece of thing, how important is community in that area, community collaboration, to stay, to move forward as a new professional? How important is that?
I think it's really important. When I started out in security, I didn't know anything. One of my colleagues taught me about Hack the Box, and he taught me how to start hacking. I got really into it, and then we started like a community on the internet, on the Slack channel. We called ourselves Professional Slackers, and we were just hacking boxes. So it's like boot to root, where you are a user, or you're scanning a website, and then you get all the way to administrator to capture some flags. And so that's really cool. And the reason I was able to do it was because I had help from a lot of people in the community. I could ask them questions about, I'm stuck at this part, how can I move on? Obviously, you should try to do some things yourself, but you shouldn't try harder and keep banging your head against the wall. You should try smarter. When you're stuck and you've tried for a reasonable amount of time, ask someone. And I think that's, as an MVP, we should look for opportunities to give that help. I think also, if you're new, seek out communities, especially a lot of these hacking websites like Pond Labs or Hack the Box or Try Hack Me. They have Discord servers with communities. It's really easy to get into. If you're a beginner, they will help you. I am on all three Discords, so if I see you, I will also help you. And it's a great place to start learning about security, because hacking is really cool and it teaches you how to break stuff, and that makes it easier to defend against it as well. So it's and you will actually make friends. That's like a 100% guarantee. I made a lot of friends doing that. A lot of really, really skilled hackers and penetration testers that helped me with a lot of things. So I think it's actually, if you go that route and you really enjoy that, that's like alpha and omega to, I think, get really fast into like cybersecurity.
Yeah. And what kind of role do we need to play in that area? We as MVP, so to say.
Oh, that's a good question. I think a lot of roles. I think, yeah, as a mentor, you could follow up. But just, I'm, what do you call it? I'm a paper MVP for the most part. I mainly write blog posts, but I also do a lot of like hang out in Slack, in Discord, on forums, hang out on the CCPs and answer questions, write in private messages to people, like they're asking a question, try to help them, trying to accomplish this with Sentinel, okay, here's how you can do that, or check this resource out, and just be like a point people in the right direction. But also if someone wants to do sparring, a lot of people, I think this is really cool. I would never, if you told me like 2-3 years ago, people would be writing me messages on LinkedIn saying, ah, I love your blog, I'm trying to do this, can you like tell me a bit how you would do that and stuff. It's really cool. I will never get used to it. It's really weird to me. But I think it's also, I try to reply as fast as I can and with like a lot of detail. Because I think if you take the time to reach out and even just say, hey, I can say hi back, but if you have a interesting question and you go to someone who is supposed to be like a proven expert in their field, I would hope that they would at least point me to somewhere, right? So I got a specific example. I got like a question about, I'm trying to do this. Like, I think it was like assigning access to a managed identity or something via Azure Lighthouse roles, which was possible, but it was very badly documented for a while. And so I did a lot of tests. I think I spent like my whole Saturday just testing this concept for some random guy on LinkedIn. And then I found out how to do it. I wrote a blog about it, obviously, because I had to get something. But initially, I was just trying to see if I could make the concept he was asking about work. So I think things like that is the role we can play. But as long as you have time for it, I think do what feels natural. If you want to be an MVP, you don't have to spend a lot of time just helping people. But you shouldn't, like, you should help people in a way that feels natural to you is the more right thing to do, so you don't burn out. But just do what feels natural when it comes to like spending time helping other people.
Amazing. That's a really insightful and very inspirational advice, Bruce. I really liked it, because that's what we do, right? Helping each other because we love what we do at the end. So looking at the time as well, had a great conversation, but I think it's time for our special question of the episode. It's the AI generated question based on our conversation and some questions. So here it goes, Charles. Charles, with your expertise in security monitoring, CMNAT ADR, I'm curious, if security was a video game, would you be the hero, the villain, or the NPC? And for the people that are not gamers, that's a non-personal character, who's always telling you where to go next. And what's your ultimate security power up?
I know what I'm going to answer, but I'm a bit afraid because I know the kids these days, they are they actually know what NPC is, and it's not a good thing to be called an NPC, but it's basically you're basically being called a background character, like you're not important. So kids are calling each other NPCs, and it's very negative. But I think I would be an NPC, to be honest. I think I would be like the when you get like a bit into the game, and there's a like a mini tutorial in the middle, and I'm just pointing people in the right direction. I think that would be me. Just hopefully like they come to my blog and I can guide them in sort of like a right direction. And my secret or ultimate power up would be to eliminate all false positives from my security monitoring. That would be my special skill.
That's an amazing answer. Good.
Yeah, and what we see and what we see with this is that AI knows you better than we do, because AI knows that you are a video gamer doing Counter-Strike, World of Warcraft. That's important to play with. For me, I'm not a gamer, so it's a complete new world to me. But really interesting your explanation about the NPC and so on. So I will keep keep learning me, and I will ask my kids on that definitely. So let's move into that one. To finish up a bit, some personal insights. What in your work as a cybersecurity professional, what motivates you the most to do the things that you do every day?
I don't know. I think it's just I really like to just, I think, like, being able to write code is sort of like a superpower. I think it's cool to just play around with things like that. Sometimes, as I said earlier, maybe a couple of months I do nothing. I read some news, but nothing is like interesting. And then you get like this kick where you're like, oh, this is really cool. I want to learn more about it. I want to try it. Someone is having an issue with it. I will like write proof of concepts until I die. That's sort of like the thing where you get this, like you have an unquenchable thirst, like you're really curious about something, you want to try and find out everything you can about it, and then that lasts for 2 to 3 months, and then it's gone, and then you need to find something else. So that's sort of like how I'm able to motivate myself. It's if I have the time, and if I feel like it's really interesting, I will just dedicate some of my time to it. As we all know, it is time consuming to keep doing this. If you're creating presentations, it takes a long time. You need to create the outline and the slides, and you need to verify them, and you need to rehearse, and you need to send in call for papers. It's a whole thing. So you spend a lot of time doing it, and I think it's just, if you can help one person learn something, give some insights, it's really valuable to me. And if I find something where it's like everyone is doing it wrong, I want to be like, instead of someone else will like tell them not to do that, I'm like, I can do it, it's fine, it can also be me. So I think those things are like, just, if I think I said it one time with my blog, it's like, I don't need anyone to read it, really. It's like, if one person was like, checked it out and they found an answer to something they were looking for, just one person, I was like, that would be really cool. Like, it's someone like tells you, like, I saw your presentation, or I saw this podcast, I read your blog, and it helped me to do something. It's like, if one person says that, I will live for quite a few years just on that alone. It's really cool. So, yeah. Oh, it's a lot of things, but yeah.
Yeah. So, Puyan, before I will finish up, do you have one last question? Okay. And I think the microphone is dead on his end.
Oh, sorry. No, I was saying, I think we talked about a lot of stuff. You mentioned a couple of projects of you coming, but to sum it up for our listeners as well, any other, or maybe to focus a little bit more on those projects that you're working, any specific personal or professional goals for the coming period?
Personally, just keep doing what I'm doing at the pace I'm going. Just stay true to what I enjoy doing, and just... It's like, I can always say I'm going to post more this year, but I won't. It's going to be the same pace as always. I just had surgery on my knee, so hopefully in the next couple of months it's good so I can run again. That's a big one. But for for like the things I'm working on, I want to make sure that my PowerShell modules are better than they currently are. So it's going to be a lot of code. I want to, before summer, I want to get my Azure function out and my project out, and hopefully also the training I've been creating is out at some point during the next months. So those are the things I'm like, really, I want to get this done before summer. No, I think that's about it. I think it's also, as like a work thing, I'm looking into OT, operational technology, and I know they are integrating Defender for IoT with Defender XDR now. So it's most likely, if you're working as an MSSP or with CM and stuff like that, and you have a customer who has some sort of IoT OT network that's like been just staying there, no detection, no nothing, it's a good idea to maybe explore that a bit, because it is a minefield. So that's also something I'm going to be focusing on this year.
Amazing.
Okay, thanks for joining us today in this episode, Truls. It's really amazing to hear the story and what's all about your personal interest on this. So thanks for that.
Thanks for having me.
And this is a wrap for today's MVP Security Insights episode of the Talking Security. Thank you so much for joining us. And special thank you to Trills for sharing his knowledge and his insights today. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe to our podcast so you never miss out the latest security news. Don't forget to give us a rating and leave a review. That helps us so we know what we're doing good or not good. You can follow us on the social media platforms, LinkedIn and so on, for more updates coming up. So for now, stay secure, stay informed, and we'll catch you in the next episode of the Talking Security Podcast. Talking Security Podcast.